You are listening to a podcast from The National.
Jose Mourinho did what Jose Mourinho does best by leading Manchester United to a grinding win over Tottenham. For all the recent plaudits he's received recently, it rounded off a disappointing week for Spurs manager Mauricio Pochettino. Manchester City won yet again. Are they shaping up to be the best team in Premier League history? We discuss this and all the latest from the Premier League before looking ahead to this week's Champions League fixtures. This is the Extra Time Podcast. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me in the studio, Steve Luckings.
Hello, mate.
And John McCauley.
Hey, mate. How you doing?
All good. We'll also get the thoughts of former Tottenham manager Harry Redknapp on Spurs' clash with Real Madrid before Ian Hawkey joins us on the phone to talk Roma v Chelsea and Napoli v Manchester City. Gentlemen, let's start with the early game on Saturday, Manchester United-Tottenham. One of us called it last week, I think, that it was...
Was that you?
I think it might be the one non-Tottenham fan in the room. Manchester United, Mourinho would find a way to grind this out. His kind of reaction, the finger to the lips and his reaction in the media afterwards is, again, very Mourinho-esque. What did you make of the game? What have you made of it all, the reaction since?
Well, it fits very much into the Jose Mourinho mantra, doesn't it, in terms of making the other team make a mistake. And that's what it all boils down to. It's a long punt forward from David De Gea, a flick on from Lukaku. I'm sorry, the finish. I mean, any other day that, Lloris gobbles that up and Martial becomes a laughing stock at Old Trafford. But he didn't, it kind of Forrest Gumped its way into the net. And I thought Spurs, we praised Pochettino for his team selection and pulling a few surprises. None more surprising than not... See, I would have much rather have seen Fernando Llorente with Son playing off of him instead of Son as the furthest forward attacker. I don't think it really worked. Yeah, maybe a bit of a missed trick there. And you're right, it does... All of a sudden, the plaudits and walking in a winter wonderland of, the draw against Real Madrid and demolishing Liverpool, it's backed up with a silly defeat to West Ham in the League Cup. A real lesson from a Jose Mourinho team in how to win tight games.
What have you made of all of Mourinho's reaction then, Corks? I mean, the line that he said in the press afterwards, some people speak too much, calm down, relax a little bit. Don't speak too much. Speak, relax. Relax a little bit. Don't be too nervous. Don't be so excited.
You sounded just like him as well.
Thanks. What have you made of his sort of reaction?
Classic
since?
Mourinho, really, isn't it? Yeah. It's all part of his psychology. I think it's almost as if he enjoys nothing more than proving his critics wrong as opposed to winning. I think obviously that came, he got both at the weekend, but just the fact that the shushing gesture when the camera was on him right at the end and he turned around, it was almost as if to say, I've won again. I have answered my critics. And he thrives on it. And it seems like it's definitely part of his psychology. We all know that. But he just loves it whenever everything seems against him. He feeds off that energy. And it's whether it's a construct of his own imagination or whether it genuinely exists, he needs that there to get everything to galvanise the team and galvanise himself, really. So the fact that he had set the team out almost similar to the team against Liverpool in terms of what they were looking to do is to stifle Spurs, which says a lot for Spurs coming to Old Trafford that he thought that, and he was very complimentary of Spurs afterwards. But it just showed you that the Mourinho thing is in the big games, and he doesn't have the best record in the big games with Manchester United, but it is, we will not be beaten. And then if we get anything after that, that's the bonus, and his game plan worked, and he revels in that, and I think it's now, well, it is, isn't it? It's 4 points off Liverpool and Spurs, and that was United's big, that was the question mark over them coming into these games, that they hadn't played any of the big boys yet. But if you're going to take 4 points from away to Liverpool and at home to Spurs at the end of the season, it doesn't matter how you get those points, you've got them, and that will be very, very important for United's title challenge.
But the thing is, this whole thing about silencing his critics, no one ripped into them more than Mourinho after the Huddersfield defeat. Like, he tore him a new strip in that game, didn't he? Absolutely excoriated them. So, if anything, he answered himself with that report.
Next weekend is another test. They travel to Chelsea. It'll be the first time he heads back to Stamford Bridge since I mean, the first time that he's gone back since their 4-0 thrashing in the league last season. It won't be quite the same outcome next weekend, I would have thought. It'd be a tighter game. Another chance for Mourinho to prove himself, more kind of crowds and people to shush. What do you think?
Yeah, I think very much last season was a one-off. Not many teams are going to put four past a Jose Mourinho team. And obviously it didn't help Pedro scored after, about 3 seconds in that game, didn't he? So they were always on the back foot. But yeah, and again, I don't think Mourinho is going to deviate too far away from the tactics we saw against Spurs, that we saw against Liverpool. You know, his blueprint is make the other team make a mistake, and if the opposition team are on the ball, they're much more likely to be pressured into a mistake. And, like we've always said, Mourinho doesn't really care about outside influences, does he? If he goes there as a dull 0-0, as 20% possession, he'll take that all day long.
I think the most interesting thing is the build-up to it, because there'll be real sniping going on between Mourinho and Conte. That's developed into, I'd say, the big managerial rivalry this season. We thought we'd get it with Mourinho and Guardiola, and it hasn't happened. They were very, again, complimentary of each other before the two teams met. So I think I'd be quite interested to see Mourinho kind of work in his mind games, as he loves to do, and see if he can get under Conte's skin. And Conte's been very easily irritated this season, I would say. So that would be a real intriguing thing for me in the build-up, to see if that has any impact on the match.
Well, like Mauricio Pochettino then, guys, so much, as we've mentioned in the intro, and Lux, you just mentioned as well, so much, deserved praise heading his way over the job he's done at Tottenham the last few seasons. But it's been a disappointing week. You mentioned the defeat in the League Cup, which was just inexcusable, wasn't it?
I went to bed at 2-0 before that one was in the bag. So.
And then, losing at Manchester United isn't the worst, but it was a pretty abject performance. He insisted before the United game that Tottenham can win without Harry Kane, win the big games, but can they?
Well, I mean, I think a lot was made last season of when Harry Kane was out of the team, but we didn't lose a match when Harry Kane had his two spells out injured. But again, that's not the same as, going away to these kind of places and winning them, is it? And what's Pochettino's record now? Is it one win against the top six?
16.
In 16 attempts, that's on the road, yeah? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weight behind that argument. And, Harry Kane, he's the fulcrum of that team. He's the tip of the attack. For me, I don't think he's the most important player in the team at the moment. I think that is still Christian Eriksen. But, when you've got a guy who's getting you 30 goals a season, of course you're going to miss him, especially in the big games, because that's when you need him the most. But, they do have another big game coming up this week against Real Madrid. And they were superb in the Bernabeu. They were absolutely superb in that game. It's a nice game to try and get over this defeat. No player needs motivation coming up against Real Madrid at Wembley. And Spurs can put themselves in a real strong position to advance to the knockout rounds. So they've got to get over this defeat pretty quickly. And I'm confident they can turn it around.
Are they expecting Kane to be back for Real Madrid? Have they mentioned, has there been any word on that yet?
Yeah, Pochettino's been very coy about it, like he was in the build-up to the Manchester United match. I believe so. I think that Kane will be back, but you've then got to think, obviously it's a huge match, but you've got to, I think Pochettino said in the press conference after the match at the weekend that it's not as if this is at the end of the season, you can just throw Kane in. Spurs do have a lot of important fixtures coming up after this with Arsenal and Dortmund, etc. So it wouldn't surprise me if Kane doesn't play, but it seemed as if Pochettino was leaning to Kane playing against Real Madrid.
Still quite early days, but they're 8 points behind City now. Anyone trying to catch up with City looks like a tough task at the moment, but they're going to have to claw those points back quickly if they want to mount a serious title challenge.
Yeah, I don't really think it matters what Spurs do from now on. City are just in such phenomenal form. Like you mentioned at the top of the show, are they the greatest team in Premier League history? They're certainly on track to be.
Yeah, let's discuss City. So the 3-2 win at West Brom, that means it is the best ever start to a Premier League season after 10 games, 1-9, drawn 1, unbeaten in 21 in all competitions. you know, there has been a bit of an argument, or at least a discussion, that is this the best team in Premier League history? I mean, it's very premature still, though, isn't it? They haven't actually won anything. But as a collective, as a team, you'd be hard-pressed to look at an 11, or, I mean, if you can pick a best 11 from that squad, that, I mean, that is up there with the teams that have achieved a great deal, the Invincibles, Mourinho's first team, the numerous Ferguson United teams. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the fact that the goals and the performances are being spread around so many of their players. You know, Aguero didn't start in the win against West Brom. Sterling, you wrote a piece yesterday, didn't you, Colts? Leroy Sané, very much out of favour start of the season, and he's very much the form player in the league at the moment with his goals return. Only bettered by Raheem Sterling, who seems to have really taken on board. You know, I know during the transfer window there was suggestion that City were using him as a make-weight for the Sanchez deal, but I don't think that was the case. I mean, it was Arsenal wanting to use him as a make-weight, and Guardiola stamped it out straight away, just said, no, straight cash deal for Sanchez, Sterling is not part of it. And that's a massive confidence booster, isn't it, when Guardiola is, you know, not prepared to sanction a deal like that. And he's repaid that faith in leaps and bounds. Gabriel Jesus, I was reading a stat the other day, hasn't lost a game in this calendar year, 2017. and the thing is, you can look at that team, and there are weaknesses. I think there are still plenty of question marks over Stones, plenty of question marks over Nicolas Otamendi as a centre-back pairing. Kompany, you know, started the season, has been out injured again. No doubt he's their best defender. Benjamin Mendy, the tank, you know, and they've compensated for his injury loss by playing Fabian Delph, who's been very much a peripheral figure since he joined City. He's being reinvented as a left wing back. You know, that team does have weaknesses, but the best teams cover up their weaknesses. And City do that by absolutely suffocating you of the ball and possession.
I think they've got the attacking riches that they have just negates the problems, the weaknesses that they have at the back. But I do think that, as you said, Johnny, it's very, very premature to label them the best team in Premier League history. You got to look at the Chelsea team in, was it 2004-05,
Mourinho's first Chelsea team.
They conceded 15 goals, so it's still a record or whatever. Do you know, they and the United team in, was it 2008-2009 that went to, or 2007-2008 with Tevez, Ronaldo, Rooney, and you had Vidic and Ferdinand at the back.
Still think the first double Arsenal winning team of 98 was actually better than the Invincible team of 2003. So yeah, like you said, there's plenty of great teams down the road to compare, but I mean, what more can they do? They're just absolutely blowing teams away.
Yeah. I think those teams were built on solid foundations as well as having the best attack in the league, but this City team, as you said, I'm not too sure that they do have that. You looked at, was it Otamendi for the second goal against West Brom where he tried to chest it back to Ederson? Yeah. Those things wouldn't happen with a Ferdinand or a Vidic or with a John Terry or Carvalho or whoever else was playing at the time. So they've got, as I said, flaws, but they've also got probably one of the best attacks we've ever seen in the Premier League, which kind of papers over the cracks.
And we've not even mentioned him yet, Kevin De Bruyne. They've got Kevin De Bruyne.
There you go.
They've got a big week as well. We'll get Ian's thoughts a bit later in the show about playing Serie A leaders Napoli in the Champions League, but then they welcome Arsenal. They welcome, is it at the Etihad next weekend? Sunday? I think so, isn't it?
So, yeah.
They welcome Arsenal to the Etihad. Let's hope that's right.
Yeah.
in the Premier League, Arsenal are back in some good form as well. That should be a good test.
Yeah, it should be. Again, it's very up and down for Arsene Wenger, isn't it? Always is. Yeah, I don't even think they've had their real seasonal wobble yet. I think that's still to come. But yeah, they're ticking along nicely. I think they've largely recovered from the 4-0 slacking they took at the hands of Liverpool. And yeah, you know, it's, and again, harking back to the Sanchez transfer saga, nothing says I'm sorry like a few kind of match-winning performances, does it? And in fairness to him, he seems to have knuckled down. His attitude seems to be spot on in the games. So yeah, it's a road to recovery. I think they look a lot, I never thought I'd say this. I mean, they look a lot more steady with Per Mertesacker in that defence as well. You know, I think that's what a team need, like a real leader, not advocating him as the best defender in the Premier League, London, or even Arsenal for that matter. But he does have real experience, World Cup winner, great leadership qualities. And I think Wenger has belatedly recognised that.
I think, though, still they're only ever one match away from crisis, aren't they? Yeah. So it's a huge test for them at the weekend. I thought against Swansea, I didn't see the match, but from reading about the various match reports, that they weren't particularly good against Swansea, and Swansea could have caught them on the counter attack a good few times until they'd made the game safe. So I would. You would think that you would have some sort of reaction from Sanchez, seeing as he was so heavily linked with Manchester City, and people expect him to go there in January or next summer. I don't quite know where he would fit into that team at the moment, no, to be I fair, don't. And why City would need him. But you would think he would have the bit between his teeth. Arsenal should do, because they've got a point to prove. But as I said, it's just a lot of the time they set themselves up for a fall, and I think they would. They might be worried about facing a rampant City this weekend.
What are the rest of the Premier League highlights from this weekend? Good win for Chelsea. I mean, it should have been more than 1-0, but if you watched it, it really was the Eden Hazard show. He got the goal, was absolutely phenomenal throughout. It's good to see him back to kind of his best after an injury kind of disrupted start to the season.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he was the jewel in that crown of that title-winning team. Last season, obviously, he suffered a very bad ankle injury over the summer. And you get the feeling Chelsea have been waiting for him to come back. I know Alvaro Morata has had a very bright start to his Chelsea career. But for me, there's always been this nagging doubt that we're just waiting for Hazard to come back and catch fire before we really see Chelsea go on the front foot. But for me, I think they've got too much ground to make up on City now, but with Hazard in the team, he's such a wonderful player, isn't he? You know, he just darts about all over that front line. He's almost impossible to contain, and like you say, he definitely deserved more than what he got out of that game.
Yeah, I think Hazard's up there with De Bruyne as the two best players in the league, or the two standout players, especially when he comes back. And yeah, he has shown signs since he's come back. He's been integrated slowly with the team, and he's looked like he's getting close to being where he needs to be, and he will then push Chelsea that little bit further in terms of trying to get closer to City. I agree with Steve-O. I think the gap's too big even at this early stage, but I think Chelsea will be looking, they'll certainly be looking at top spot, but they'll be looking at second spot as well.
The most dramatic game of the weekend was at Selhurst Park. You'd probably agree, would you, lads? Crystal Palace stole a 2-2 draw against West Ham, 97th minute equaliser from Wilfred Zaha. The reaction of Roy Hodgson on the touchline said it all, I think.
Yeah. And Slaven Bilic. who was tying his hands and knees.
The two contrasting images there. That was a huge point for Palace. But Richard Jolly had Joe Hart in his team of the week this week. I didn't see the game, but apparently he had it. You know, it could have been a Palace win if it wasn't for Joe Hart.
Well, I can't think of many other goalkeeping performances that stood out, but I mean, I think he's really badly at fault for Zaha's goal. I know it's gone through a hefty set of legs before it gets to him. And again, Joe Hart laid into his teammates afterwards, called them unprofessional, which they were. You know, you shouldn't be 2-0 up against the bottom of the table, Crystal Palace, and lose a 2-goal lead, especially in the 97th minute. But he's part of that unprofessional outfit that let it slip. And you know, I think you touched on it last week, Colks, that West Ham, one of those teams, or you know, Bilic's predicament when we spoke last week was very much along the lines of Koeman. Like, he had maybe one game to save his job. They had a fantastic result against Spurs in the League Cup. Like you said, they always get that one result that kind of relieves the pressure, and then they go back it up with this performance against Palace. And they were well worth their lead, definitely. I mean, Andre Ayew's goal was absolutely superb. Javier Hernandez does what Hernandez does, doesn't he? Sticks it away in the box. You know, just leave him in there, basically. You don't need to go very too far away from the six-yard area. But yeah, it was. He hit the nail on the head that it was unprofessional. But I'm sorry, he's as culpable as anyone for throwing 3 points away.
I think it was the fact that Mikel Antonio had the ball down in the corner.
Yeah.
And in the 96th minute and tried to cross it.
It's just unforgivable, isn't it? You know, just And, you know, it's not like he didn't have 80,000 people telling him what to do, is it? And a couple of teammates, I'm sure. But, yeah, they shot themselves in the foot. They've got no one else to blame but themselves.
I think the big thing for Palace, just very quickly, Johnny, is that Wilfred Zaha back is huge for them. And you've seen, even though the results mightn't have mirrored, the fact that he's come back and contributing to the team again, I think he's going to be a huge player for them if they're going to survive.
They can't lose him in January, can they, if another club comes in for him? Because it's possible he's good enough to warrant another move somewhere bigger, but they simply can't afford to lose him, can they?
No. He interested Mauricio Pochettino, I think, in the summer, didn't he, Steve? I think it was, anyway. So they did very well to hold on to him then. Did he sign a new contract?
Yeah, signed a new deal. So
he'll be integral to any chance they have of staying up, because Townsend hasn't been as good as what he was last season, and he needs someone to kind of take some of the burden, I think.
I thought he was very good against West Ham, he was. And it's interesting as well, you know, for how many weeks now has it been doom and gloom? They're only now 4 points away from safety. Mm-hmm. And you're right, that has been spearheaded by Wilfred Zaha being back in that team, compensating. And you're thinking that it can only be now, what, a week or two before Benteke comes back. All of a sudden, you know, the signs are good. It was a real battling performance from them in that game. And you know, even though they are bottom of the table, I'm looking at the table now, the teams that worry me are Bournemouth and Everton rather than Palace.
Yeah. It's deceptive when there's a big points gap at the bottom after a team starts poorly, because the teams around them don't pick up lots of points. Yeah. So if you go on a run, it can be quite easier than it looks to kind of catapult yourself out of the relegation zone. I mean, if you fall 8 points behind Man City, it's difficult to claw it back because they win every week. Yeah. But the teams like, you know, Huddersfield and Bournemouth and at the moment Everton, they're not picking up wins. They're not collecting any points. So it's easy enough if you win a couple of games, you're almost out of there.
And you would think Palace have the firepower to do that with Zaha back, with Townsend and Benteke once he comes back. If the three of those guys get firing again, they seem to have a lot more attacking wise than what Everton certainly do at the moment, as for all the reasons we've touched upon before. And Bournemouth, it's not really happening for them either. So you would look at that and Palace would think, yeah, they've certainly got a run of games that you would hope that they can get points from and catch up with those teams.
A good, much-needed win for Liverpool, 3-0 against Huddersfield Town. It seemed that all the attention was just on the friendship of Klopp and Wagner before the game.
The bromance, yeah.
Rather than actually a game there's a game of football going on somewhere. but you know, much, much needed win for Liverpool, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it was always going to be very hard for Huddersfield to back up the superb performance they put in against United. I thought they might enjoy some success given how we were all wondering how Liverpool were going to line up at the back. Now, obviously, Dejan Lovren suffered an injury during the warm-up, so he was brought out of the firing line once again. But, I don't know. I think Huddersfield may have missed a bit of a trick, not really bombarding and peppering Simon Mignolet and that Liverpool defence with enough high balls. Now, again, you know, it's route one, it's ugly, you know, call it what you want. But when you've got assets like Steve Meunier and Del Potro up front and you're not really playing, I don't think Huddersfield really asked enough questions of a very suspect Liverpool defence.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I think Liverpool needed that, didn't they? The fact that they played so poorly in the match beforehand against Spurs. So I think that I always thought that it would set up quite well for them, because as I said to you last week, that I thought maybe the Manchester United result would take a lot out of Huddersfield. So Liverpool got themselves back on track. Whether or not they're another team that are maybe papering over the cracks, I'm not too sure, but it was definitely something that it was a necessary win for them.
It was nice to see Daniel Sturridge on the score sheet, I thought. Really nice, tidy finish from him, mm-hmm. I thought. Well set up by the Huddersfield right back as well.
He had a horrible game, didn't he? Was it Smith? He gave away the penalty as well.
And how he was protesting that is ridiculous. He nearly strangled Firmino, didn't he? But yeah, no, I think it was a criticism that you touched on, John, that Liverpool don't have they don't play with a recognised centre forward, but they do have one in Sturridge. Yeah. Like there's options there to go with it. And I was just really pleased for him to get on the score sheet. Like I said, I thought it was a really cracking little finish, nice and tidy.
Good player. I think Daniel Sturridge is a cracking player. It's just he needs to stay fit and then get a run of games.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
If Klopp will afford him a run of games, that is. Well, it's a good win for Liverpool, but more misery for their City rivals, Everton. 2-0 defeat at Leicester City on Sunday. It was just another flat performance, clueless. It's really not going well for them at all this season, is it?
I honestly don't know what they do, because you know they were up against another team. You know, we were presented with two teams with two new managers in charge. Klopp for Leicester City, great start for him, getting 3 points and a really impressive performance. But I'm sorry, I don't think you really need to get out of second gear against Everton to put in a decent performance anymore. You know, it was interesting to see him drop Gylfi Sigurdsson, play Calvert-Lewin up top, recall Kevin Morales, and I've been championing his calls for, it feels like, 18 months now. Can't really understand why he's left on the bench. But again, they were so ordinary. Like, they just didn't really offer anything. And Andy Mitten was at the game. And you know, speaking to him yesterday, he spent a lot more of his report focused on the reactions of the two sets of fans, obviously, because they're dealing with new managers. And he was saying, speaking to the Everton fans, they almost seem resigned to the fact that, I don't think that they're going to get relegated, but they're going to have to come with a late charge just to make sure they're safe at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, the problems up front are well documented, but I'm surprised at how bad they've been at the back as well. We said before about Ashley Williams has had a horrible season so far. Jagielka wasn't particularly good at the weekend. So it just seems that they're in real need of a lift, and I don't think Unsworth doesn't really appeal as the sort of, you know, obviously he's an Everton man and he's got experience within the club and at different age groups, but I just don't think that he seems the sort of right personality to come in and really galvanise the team. And I think they need maybe a few feathers ruffled, perhaps, you know, someone to really come in and bang a few heads together and say that this simply isn't good enough.
And who's that man? Put you on the spot.
Oh, God. Well, if you listen to Andy Gray and Richard Keys yesterday, it's Big Sam. Yeah,
that's his name now, isn't it? Big Sam.
Big Sam.
Changed all his verses.
It's a difficult one because you just think, I think they've almost got a...
Would that be a terrible appointment, do we think?
Not for the predicament that they're in at the moment.
No, but I don't think the chairman will go for it, will he? I think he's got bigger ambitions. Unless you're going to just give Allardyce a till the end of the season contract, which I don't think he'd accept. And it just, I don't know. I don't think it's the most inspired choice.
No, I don't. And I think looking at that squad, it's a false position that they're in. But I don't know. I've watched them the last couple of weeks now. I don't see where that one spark to get them going is coming from. I just don't see it.
Well, this is what I'm going to ask next, guys. They get a new manager in, whoever that might be. Now it's a case of grinding out till January, I assume, and then reinvesting again in the players. Because, I mean, that was clearly one of Koeman's biggest problems. He bought the wrong players.
How do you attract someone, though, if they're still in the same situation that they're in going into January, unless you throw lots and lots of money at them? How are you going to attract a real, genuinely top-notch goal scorer to get you out of that position? I think they're making a rod for their own back. And I think as well there might be a bit of identity crisis there at Everton in terms of you've got Mashiri there who's invested all that money in the summer, and you've got Bill Kenwright alongside him. I don't know if Kenwright would like an Unsworth to stay there and prove himself, because he's the old romantic, obviously, as everyone says, and or else bring David Moyes back, which I don't think would be the right thing to do at all. But you would think Mashiri would fancy a kind of marquee name or a decent kind of big name foreign manager to come in. So they need to decide what path they want to choose first.
But they've got real, you know, we bang on about the problems up front, and you know they didn't buy a goal scorer, but I really think they need to reinvest in maybe one or two centre backs as well. Mm-hmm. Ashley Williams just looks shot to pieces now, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Jagielka, I think has been massively off the pace for a couple of seasons now. Seamus Coleman, they're not expecting back till the new year. Like, there's and Will Keane has not, and I think he will, but he's not shown the form that he showed at Burnley last season. I think there's a more than decent shout to go and buy some real quality defenders just to make sure their predicament doesn't get even worse.
Let's look ahead to the midweek Champions League games then, chaps. All the English teams going really strong. Lux, what was the stat that you pulled out?
They've played 15 games, zero defeats, all of them or most of them top of their group. So, yeah, they're all in great positions to progress.
You thought I was going to steal that, didn't you?
I teed you up for it, mate. Because I'm the only one with access to that information.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. You had to dig deep for that one. Well done.
Better make sure it's right. Hang on.
Few teams can book their places in the knockout stages this week. Manchester United, who take on Benfica. Paris Saint-Germain, who take on Anderlecht. Chelsea, when they travel to Roma. Barcelona, who take on Olympiacos. But game of the week is between two teams that are completely locked, level on points, level on goal difference, goal scored, conceded. Tottenham, Real Madrid. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think Spurs will relish this game, and who wouldn't? You know, Real Madrid, the European champions in town. Great setting, match at Wembley. And yeah, and I think Spurs will be smarting after the United defeat. But they're going great guns in the Champions League. I don't think even the Spurs in their wildest dreams would have thought at the halfway stage they'd be 6 points clear of Dortmund. Going into their second game with Real Madrid, and I really fancy they can at least take a point again off Real Madrid. I think, you know, as Colt said, if Harry Kane looks like he is winning his fitness race to be back, that boosts their chances. But yeah, it's really one to look forward to, and I really think they'll correct that lapse in concentration that cost them so dearly against United.
I was going to say Tottenham may be reeling a bit from losing at Man United, but that's no great shame. But Real Madrid losing this weekend was a big shock. Now, they will definitely want to be looking to bounce back from that.
Yeah, especially I think they're third in the table in Spain, aren't they? I think there's already a little bit of a gap that's opened up between them and Valencia and certainly Barcelona above them. They'll need to bounce back from that. And I think there'd be more pressure on Real Madrid to get a result because they're the Champions League holders. They're expected, really everyone when the draw came out, even though that was a very tough group, they're expected to top the group. And for Spurs, I think they can hopefully enjoy the occasion and see what if they can put in the same sort of performance that they did a couple of weeks ago at the Bernabeu. And as Steve-O said, it's very much dependent, their fortunes anyway, on whether or not Harry Kane is fit enough to start the match. Because I think if he does start, Spurs' chances increase quite a bit. And you've got Dele Alli is
back, isn't he? And Real Madrid, I think, are missing Rafael Varane for that game as well. So, you know, talk about Spurs' injury worries. I know Real Madrid are also missing, you know, likes of Gareth Bale as well. So the thing is, Real Madrid's domestic form and the European form are completely different. Mm-hmm. But Pochettino sprung such a surprise in the first leg, playing Llorente and Kane up front together. Wouldn't surprise me if he went with that formation again. We shall see.
And I would say that one caveat is Real Madrid weren't playing too well whenever they went to Borussia Dortmund last month and absolutely annihilated them there. They won 3-1. So Spurs have to be very, very careful because Real Madrid need to prove a point after the weekend.
Do you see the statistic about Ronaldo today? His conversion rate so far this season?
No.
6 games, averaging 6.7 shots a game, 1 goal, for a conversion rate of 2.5%, which is the lowest in Europe.
Wow.
That's a much league. Better stat than yours. Yeah.
Right. Lads, I'm retiring on that one.
So, this is Cristiano Ronaldo Champions League game. It wouldn't surprise you if he turns in a performance and finds his scoring form.
Yeah, they do love a Champions League game, don't they, Real Madrid? They've been here, got the T-shirt printed it themselves. So, yeah, it's an interesting game. But, yeah, I think if Spurs can take at least a point, knowing that they've got to travel to Borussia Dortmund, got Apoel as their home game, yeah, I really think it will put them in a very strong position if they can at least take a point off Madrid.
John, you spoke to former Tottenham Hotspur manager Harry Redknapp when he was in Dubai last week. He was obviously in charge the last time Tottenham played Real Madrid in the Champions League. Here's what he had to say.
What's the challenge facing Spurs next week, and what do you think they need to get out of that to looking forward?
Well,
to
it's a massive challenge for them, you know, but that was a great challenge going over to Madrid and playing and coming away with a great result. So, I mean, what a fantastic game to look forward to for the fans, for the club, for, you know, playing Real Madrid. Be a tough game for Madrid as well. You know, at the moment, Tottenham are, you know, Borussia Dortmund, they saw them off comfortably. But then we saw Madrid go to Real Madrid, go to Borussia and murder them. So, and if Bale's fit, I don't know if he will be, he can make the difference. You know, Bale, Ronaldo, Modric is a great player, you know. But wouldn't that be an interesting game? Interesting. I wouldn't like to pick a winner of that one, but I'd like to watch it, that's for sure.
Manchester United take on Benfica. Of course, the last time they played them, the big talking point was the poor goalkeeper. United back at Old Trafford, they should secure their passage, shouldn't they, to the knockout stages?
Yeah, you'd think so. Benfica have got pretty good pedigree in the Champions League, especially in the autumn and winter months the past few seasons. But they've really, really struggled in it this season. Yeah, you fancy that as a comfortable win for United, I think.
Yeah, the Benfica, I don't think they've any chance of going through now, do they? They've got no points from the first three games.
Well, you've got no chance if you've got a goalkeeper pulling the ball into his own net, have you?
So you would fancy Manchester United for that.
Liverpool take on Maribor. Could we see Liverpool getting back-to-back clean sheets?
My word, I think we could. Wasn't it the biggest away win in Champions League history, the 7 they put past them in the previous round? So, yeah, you wouldn't rule out a similar score or maybe even a cricket score in this game, I don't think.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Liverpool, after getting a good result at the weekend and after what happened the last time the two teams met, I think Liverpool would fancy filling their boots in this match.
Could Klopp perhaps rest a few players? Can he afford to rest players against someone like Maribor in the Champions League when, I mean, he still must have top four ambitions in the Premier League, and he can't really afford to rotate his top three or four attackers in the Premier League anymore. Is there a chance he might rotate a bit?
There is always the chance, but I think that would see complacency creep in. I think if you can get the job done against Maribor, the easiest 3 points on offer with your strongest team, I would be tempted to go for that.
Yeah, I'd agree. They've got a tricky match at the weekend. They've got West Ham away, but I think Klopp will be putting out a very, very strong team to get over the line in this one.
Well, chaps, we're going to speak to Ian Hawkey to get his thoughts on Chelsea-Roma and Napoli City, because he's actually in Italy to cover both of those games for us. So I think he's better placed to discuss those than we are.
Yeah, I'll concede that, I reckon.
What stats he got?
Right, joining us on the phone now from London, making his way over to Italy, Ian Hawkey. Ian, how are you, mate?
All right, thanks. You guys good?
All good.
All good, mate.
Ian, let's start with the Roma-Chelsea game. The last time these two teams met, 3-3 at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea perhaps a bit fortunate to get anything out of the game. What are you expecting from this kind of reverse fixture?
Well, I'm expecting Roma to have been very motivated by the game at Stamford Bridge, which I think everyone, including many Chelsea players, acknowledged Roma had been the better side. However, you know, Chelsea are a bit of an enigma at the moment, not very consistent, with some flaws. But when push comes to shove, as it did in Madrid, you know, they're capable of coming up with some very good results. And, you know, it's a big game for Antonio Conte as well. It's his first time back in his native Italy as the manager of Chelsea, and he'll really want to put on a show, especially as it's Rome, the old enemy of any Juventus legend as Conte is. So I just hope it's even half as exciting as the Stamford Bridge game. And I think there's potential for that with Morata back, Dzeko obviously buoyed after his two goals in London. So yeah, I'm looking forward to a good contest. And of course, it's possible, should Chelsea win and Atletico continue to look rather blunt, this could push them through to the next round already. But I think, you know, that depends on all sorts of imponderables.
Ian, you talk about Chelsea's form being slightly indifferent. I noticed the Roma coach at the weekend talking about or defending some criticism that his team have become boring. I think it was their third 1-0 victory on the trot, but he was very adamant that the it wasn't a case of Roma not creating chances, it was more a case of them not putting them away.
Yes, I think the I sympathise with a coach who, having only just produced those three goals at Stamford Bridge, gets accused of being boring. But it's slightly in the context that Eusebio De Francesco has taken over this season from a Roma who, over the last two or three years, really have produced some very exciting football and for long periods, the most exciting football in Serie A. Now, they're certainly not that at the moment. So I think he's slightly being judged on his immediate predecessors in terms of flair and so on. They've certainly got firepower in Dzeko, as we mentioned. But their finishing has been a little bit indifferent. But you know, they can keep the ball very nicely, and I think to call them boring is a little unfair, and actually perhaps a sort of backhanded tribute to Serie A at the moment, where there are some very exciting sides, and Roma are just short of the likes of Napoli and so on.
Okay, and so from the Eternal City, you'll be travelling south to Naples, where Manchester City take on the Serie A leaders. Now, there's a very interesting subplot to this match in the Sergio Aguero. His next goal will take him outright as the club's all-time leading goalscorer. And what a setting to do it in a city where his father-in-law is still revered as legend, Diego Maradona. City are going great guns in the Champions League. Do you see them sealing their progress in Naples?
I think it will be quite tough, because Napoli at home this season are, you know, really quite formidable, and they were tough in Manchester too. It's arguably City's trickiest fixture so far this season. But in the context, a draw certainly wouldn't harm them. You know, they're top of the group. They've won three out of three. Now the Aguero thing, yeah, I mean, it would be really poignant. Obviously he's been very close to Maradona in his career, both professionally when Diego Maradona was coach of Argentina, and because he was involved with Diego Maradona's daughter. And he's spoken in the past of talking to Maradona about the Napoli days, about the atmosphere there. And that was probably where Maradona in his club football was both successful and happiest for the longest. That's at Napoli, where he won the league title, which they haven't done since. And the last time Aguero played there, which was a few years ago with City, there was a lot of warmth towards him because of that connection. And, you know, there's clearly a stylistic and slightly physical resemblance between Aguero, the striker, and Maradona, although you should be careful about all comparisons with Maradona, because he was out of this world. The interesting thing, of course, with Aguero is that this record, which he will break, of City's all-time greatest scorer, has been perhaps longer in arriving as he approached it than he would have liked, because he's not always starting for City. So it'll be interesting to see how much time he gets in what is a big, important game, the kind of game that, you know, he should be there to settle. I there will no doubt be a huge desire that he reaches this milestone in a very symbolic venue.
All right, well, that's great. Thanks very much for your time today.
Okay, all the best, guys.
Take care. Have a safe trip.
Take care, Ian.
Yes.
All right, fellas, that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks for stopping by.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Johnny.
You can subscribe to the Extra Time podcast on iTunes and find us on the website at thenational.ae/sport. Thanks for listening.